You're listening to Burst, live on the World Wide Web.
Good afternoon, listeners. You're listening to burst.co.uk. I'm Josh Anderson Gray, and I'm a multimedia journalism student at Bournemouth University. Today, for Time to Talk Day, I'll be supporting the UK mental health charity Minds awareness campaign called Time for Change. Now, Time for Change is all about trying to destigmatise mental health issues in today's society. Whether it be in the workplace or at school or at university, our aim is to try and speak candidly with people with knowledge about mental health issues and then find a way to address it and approach it in everyday life. Now today I'm joined with a student and by members of staff at Bournemouth University so that we can have an open discussion about mental health. And on that note, I will now allow everyone to introduce themselves and say why they've come to have this conversation with me today.
Okay, yes, good afternoon. My name's Dr. Andrew Mayers. I'm a principal academic here at Bournemouth University, where I teach clinical psychology and mental health. But beyond that, I'm a mental health campaigner, both locally and nationally. I'm linked to both the local and national Mind charities. I'm also part of Time to Change and know that team very well. I have a passion for raising awareness about mental health and destigmatising mental health generally across the country.
Good afternoon, my name is Vicky O'Connell and I'm an MA student at Bournemouth University, and I'm here today because I'm interested in mental health. I've had anxiety issues. I've grown up with my mother, who has a serious condition of obsessive compulsive disorder, and my sister has had bouts of quite serious depression and anxiety through our lives. So it's kind of something that is very important in my life and the way I've been brought up.
I see, thank you very much. Now, we are pre-recording this programme early so that it can go on Burst at 4 p.m. on Time to Talk Day. Thank you for joining us. We have had some wonderful audio sent to us by BAMJ students, or multimedia journalism students at Bournemouth University, about the subject of mental health. We're going to have these ready for you to listen to online with more content in February, so have a look at burst.co.uk/timeforchange to get involved. We are also going to follow this programme with a specially curated happy hour with Nick Degari. So the Time to Talk campaign wants us to start a conversation, and radio is an excellent space to start. We are currently in Studio One at the university. Is everyone comfortable?
Very.
Yes. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to ask Dr. Andrew Mayer. Andrew, can you please help us to understand a little bit more about mental health issues? You see, from what I've gathered, I know that 1 in 4 people are affected by some form of mental health, of a mental health issue, so to speak. Not only that, but I also know that 60% of people who have a mental health issue or are affected by one via family or friends feel that stigma and discrimination can occur should other people find out. Now, let me ask you, what is your involvement in Time for Change and the Mind charity? How do you help out and raise awareness?
Okay, there's a number of ways, really, because locally with Dorset Mind, I help with certainly in two roles. As a patron, I'm their ambassador, so it's raising the awareness and opening doors and using my contacts locally, but also advising on their on the actual services that they run. Nationally with Mind, it's more to do with raising the awareness that equally with Time to Change, which is more about the stigma, is breaking down that stigma. And you're absolutely right that people do find it very difficult to talk about mental health problems because of the perceptions that go with it. It's to do with the stereotypes, that public perceptions that someone with a mental health problem may be weak or they could pull themselves together. It's their fault. What have they got to be sad about? That sort of thing. And it's not helped by the way in which the media, TV, cinema, newspapers will portray mental health in a negative way, such as with the German Wings pilot who crashed the plane. All of these things don't help. It has this then social perception that people with a mental health problem are either dangerous or they're sad or it's their fault. With someone who has that mental health problem, who's already feeling vulnerable, they will then self-stigmatize. And what that will mean is that they will take these perceptions onto themselves, and they'll believe it. They'll believe that they're weak. They'll believe that they're sad. They will believe that they're useless, and it will stop them from applying for jobs. It will stop them from applying to go to university. It will stop them from seeking help. And all of these things are hugely detrimental, and we need to break that stigma to be able to encourage people to talk.
Thank you. Now, because of the role that mental health issues can sometimes play in the mind of a person and how other people can be affected in that sense, how important would you say it is, especially considering with all the stigma and all the discrimination that can come with it, how important would you say it is to educate people, both young and the not so young, about this matter?
Absolutely essential. And education is just one part, you know. There is some research that suggests that there are three ways that we can tackle stigma. One's protest, the other's education, and the third one is contact. The protest is all very well. We can go onto Twitter and we can complain about things that have been said in the headlines, but that can often be a little transient. The education's good. We need to be able to tell people what the facts are about mental health problems, the way in which they can be caused, and the way in which they might play out, maybe debunk some of those myths. And perhaps it's really important that we take mental health into education into schools, for instance, so young people can learn more about what they might encounter as they grow up. And these things are really powerful, but one of the most powerful ways that we can tackle stigma is contact, by bringing in people who have got that lived experience, who have been through either serious or relatively moderate mental health problems, be able to show to other people, well, this is me, I'm quite ordinary, I've survived, you can too, but we do need to go and talk, and we do need those toolkits to be able to help us survive.
Thank you. How long have you been trying to destigmatise mental health issues?
I've been involved with Mind and Time to Change in various ways for about 5 or 6 years. And it's in these last 5 or 6 years that it really has beginning to start to see changes in the way people perceive mental health.
Thank you. Now, over the course of these past 5 or 6 years, have you encountered any challenges in regards to raising awareness?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there still is almost an anti-PC brigade, if you like, that says that, you know, we're goody goodies, and we're trying to make excuses for people, and that's exactly what we're not trying to do. Also, by using the likes of social media and internet sites and all of that sort of thing to raise awareness, that also opens you up to people who will then try and debunk what you're trying to do by saying perhaps some unkind things. Then also you've got the issue of, well, you said education yourself earlier, and this is very true, but sadly there's still some journalists out there who find it fair game to use headlines to make people with mental health problems feel worse about themselves. And that will continue to be our challenge. And the other challenge, I think, is that, yes, we've been very successful in getting people to talk more, but what we've done is actually potentially raise demand. And until now, the supply from statutory or third sector services is simply not able to meet that demand.
Now, mental health issues can affect anyone. Some people may see mental health issues as something that just affects people over a certain age. However, it can affect young people as well. Speaking about young people, that leads me onto university. We're currently based at a university. We're speaking at a university, Bournemouth University. And recently, we finished our January exam season. But students all around the UK will be having exams in the spring and summer. Now, how would you advise students when they might be going through stressful times studying with exams and deadlines? What are the certain factors that you would say that they should be vigilant about, both in themselves and in other people?
I'm certainly glad you said the second part. I think it's easy for me to say, both as an academic and a mental health expert, to say that it really is about trying to manage that time. Sometimes, you know, you start the new semester, you think, oh, those exams are a long way off. And then all of a sudden they come on top of you. So it's a good idea to try and manage that time. It's a good idea to try and have some boundaries so that you get as much as you can done within those boundary times, so that you still give yourself some time at in evenings and weekends to be able to relax. And maybe just before exam time, if you then are able to schedule that time correctly, that you finish your revision a day or so before that exam, so you can actually start relaxing. The last thing you want to do is to be working all the way through the night before an exam and turn up absolutely tired, too tired to probably even take the exam, and then you're overstressing about it. So it's about managing that time, but it's also about being aware of your own vulnerability. So if you feel that you are succumbing to stress, or that your mood's changing, or that you're becoming anxious and it's affecting what you do, then seek help. At this university, we have got some excellent support services, whether that's just going along to talk to the counsellors or the chaplaincy, through to more intense therapeutic services through the Steps to Wellbeing that we provide here. So that's important. But also, I think it's very important, as you said there, about seeing it in others. I mean, with your housemates, with the friends you have in halls, watch out for them. See if their mood is changing. See if their behaviour is changing. See if they are perhaps not talking to you the way that they normally are. And don't be afraid to actually talk to them and say, hey, are you okay? Do you want to talk about it? And if they're not okay, and if you don't feel that you've got the skills to be able to help them, point them in the right direction where they can get that help.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Andrew. Now, I'm going to address you now, Vicky. You're a radio production student, isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And not only that, you're studying for your master's in radio production.
Yes, that's right, Josh.
Now, have you always studied at Bournemouth? I mean, have you been studying at Bournemouth non-stop since first year, or did you have a break at some point?
Well, that's interesting. I'm a mature student. So I did my undergraduate degree about 16 years ago, so it's quite a long time. So
surely
by
not.
Look on your face. so it's a long time. So for me, I've had a huge break, and I've been working hard in the workplace, and so had a very different lifestyle to how I'm living now.
I see. Now, as someone who's returned to study, how do you find the university and the environment itself? Would you say it's supportive, and would you say that your lecturers, they encourage you?
It's very interesting, actually, and just picking up on some of the things that Andrew said. It's very difficult, and it's not only things like the obvious stress of exams or coursework, but it's a whole new experience. It's a new lifestyle. It's a new building. It's new groups of people, and you might not necessarily have the same friends, and you'll have different friends, and they're different people. And so actually, to be kind of robust and to be able to deal with so much change takes quite a lot of effort mentally, I think. I think you have to prepare yourself, perhaps, and as Andrew was saying, really be aware of things, and especially with things like social media. You know, when Andrew was talking about, you know, talk to people, that's not the same as sending them a tweet or updating your status, or, you know, liking someone's Facebook. You know, that's not really engaging with people to really get their feelings or to really see how they're doing. So I think that's something that has interested me, and that's kind of different about my experience of university now, because I didn't have Facebook or Twitter or anything in those days. So actually, that physical engagement with people is important.
Yeah, thanks. Because the whole purpose of this programme is to destigmatise mental health issues. And I also want to make it plain that mental health issues can occur in anyone. Some people think that they can only occur in people over a certain age, whereas it can affect young people as well. Now, in order to speak candidly about this, have you had any connection whatsoever in regards to mental health?
Yes, absolutely. I've got quite a lot of experience, and I think I myself have suffered from anxiety at certain periods of my life. I had a very stressful job, and I kind of worked too hard, and it was very difficult. It was a very supportive company, but as Andrew kind of said, mental illness can be very isolating, and no matter what position you are in life, you have tools of shutting it away and, you know, kind of damping down that feeling, because outwardly you probably have to project a very different persona of yourself, especially in a workplace. Actually, you kind of have to be professional. But my mother has obsessive compulsive disorder. And really, she's lived with that since she was about 14. But it wasn't really that was the thing with her. That was an incredibly rare thing in those days. And she's in her late 60s now, I think. So she's lived with it longer than she hasn't lived with it. So it's very much a part of our lives. And there are lots of different patterns to her behaviour that I'm very aware of and familiar with. And there has been lots of benefits, I guess, in the way that we were brought up, because it's perhaps taught us to be more self-aware. And it was kept hidden for a certain amount of time. But actually, as we grew up, it was a very difficult condition to hide. And so we have, as a family, we have talked about it a lot. And it is a very obvious thing. For people who don't know, there are lots of different types of OCD. And my mum's OCD is to do with contamination with her mother. So to give you an example, she wears plastic gloves all the time. She has her own cutlery. Everything is very separate, and she sits on plastic bags, and it's quite an obvious illness in a way. You know, it's not something, she wears gloves all the time. Even in the hottest day in August, she'll have a pair of gloves on, and that's kind of a bit weird. But we've talked about it, and I mean, she's had lots of therapy, but it's something that she lives with day to day, and it's very much a continual condition that she kind of manages.
While we also want to support people with mental health issues, we also want to address some of the perceptions that other people may have. Have you found people to be particularly hostile towards other people with mental health issues? Have you observed that at any point?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think again, what Andrew was saying is, you know, you hear things like, oh, lunatic, or lots of very derogatory terms in the media. And, you know, oh, yeah, she's a bit mental, or anything like that. And I personally, you know, it bothers me when people say, oh, I'm a bit OCD about that, in terms of lining up their pens and things. And they, you know, obviously they're not. And it is one of those easy things to slip into conversation. And, I think that's one of the benefits of growing up in a family with mental health issues being actually quite a big part of our lives, because I am very aware and I feel very empathetic towards people. I like to think I can pick up on things perhaps, or just I'd like to think that I'm quite understanding and quite caring. And perhaps I wouldn't be if I didn't have that exposure to quite serious mental health issues.
Thank you. Now, the pair of you, both Vicky and Andrew, you both mentioned the media. Now, would you say that the media actually does people with mental health issues a disservice by portraying it in a certain light?
I think it depends on which part of the media you're talking about. And I won't name certain newspapers and outlets openly, because this will be going on on air later on, but I think most of us know who they are. There are some newspapers are excellent, and I will name The Guardian, because they are excellent. The way in which they report mental health is astounding, and they're very sensitive, and they have regular features from well-known people talk about their struggles with mental health. There are other newspapers who try to be sensitive, but they will put out headlines that simply are not helpful. There was one not so long ago when I mentioned earlier about the German Wings pilot. The headline in that particular newspaper was something to the effect of "Madman in the sky who killed his passengers." He wasn't mad. At worst, that we know, he had depression. We don't know that was the cause for what happened, but it's all those words that simply do not help. I've known other newspapers who can be relatively sensitive in their story, but they haven't thought a single thing about the headlines. I quite often work with people in maternal mental health who've shared their story with a newspaper, and that story's been pretty well written, but the headline suggested things like, "I was so depressed when I was having my second child, I considered killing it." And that's not what she said at all. You know, and it's about being sensitive and reporting in the right way. Time to Change have got guidelines about how we should report mental health in a certain way. I am currently talking with some of the senior academics at this very faculty about how I can contribute to some of the courses and units on how our budding journalists and media producers can report mental health, and I'll gladly do that so that our future journalists and broadcasters do this properly.
Thank you. Now, Vicky, you're currently studying a master's in radio. Do you think that there's anything more that the media can do and should do in order to promote the destigmatisation of mental health issues and to raise awareness about it?
Yes, I think my main worry is probably social media, really, and how that all brands and all conversation is really guided towards Twitter and Facebook. And I worry about the kind of filters and the prominence of trolling and bullying. And just if you only have 140 characters, just to make sure that message is the right message, perhaps. And same with Facebook, you know, you're getting through to the right people, because really mental health affects everybody, not just, you know, people who put all their beautiful pictures on Instagram and Facebook or not, you know. So I worry that messages aren't getting through to the right people at the right time, perhaps. But I guess the solution to that is kind of being as aware as we can and making sure that we do listen to people. That's a very important thing. If you're a radio producer, actually, you have to listen to people and then respond appropriately and make sure that you have the right facts and you do your research and you're sensitive and empathetic and you're not just concerned with yourself, I guess. So I think that's probably the main point for me.
All right, thank you. And also, I think that it's important that we make it clear that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, that just having a mental health issue is not the be-all and end-all, because you can get help. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had a very close friend whom he was studying, and he eventually suffered from depression because of the workload. He thought that the workload was very intense. But now he's very happy. He's living a new life and he's enjoying himself. He got the support from friends and family, and now he's doing very well for himself. And I think it's important that we make it clear that it's not all doom and gloom, and there actually is something to celebrate at the end, because you can get help and we can all join arms. If that doesn't sound too cheesy, we can all join arms, stand up, raise awareness and support each other. For Time to Talk, you've got the opportunity to make a pledge. You can go to the pledge wall at Time for Change and share your pledge. Have either of you made any pledges, or would you make a pledge in order to raise awareness, perhaps?
That's an interesting one. I guess because my whole life at some stage, every single day, is raising awareness in some way or another, or breaking down that stigma, is what I do all the time. But if I were to make one pledge today, it would be to keep carrying on that conversation. It's great that we're having these mental health conversations today, but we should be having these every day. It should be, they say that the British are always talking about the weather. Let's always talk about mental health, because it's not just about, let's face it, mental health isn't just about being ill. Mental health is what we all have in one way or another. And we can maintain good mental health by talking about that and making sure that, you know, that we're all mentally well. And we can do that.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Andrew, and thank you very much, Vicky, for coming in today. Thank you very much for listening at home. I've been Josh Anderson Gray. Look after yourselves and each other. All links and info on Time to Change website. Next up on burst.co.uk, Nick Degari's Happy Hour. Have a good one.